Do you remember last autumn how we drew cold comfort from the apparent certainty that weather in home waters couldn't get any worse? Unbelievably, we were wrong. This year, most of us have drunk deep from the cup of human misery, and you'd think that the back pages of our magazines would be bursting with yachts for sale at tumbling prices. Well, a few may have thrown in the proverbial sponge, but most of us are sticking to our guns against fearful odds. Like every true sailor, we've two things in common: natural optimism and a short memory. A tendency to hope for the best is the opiate of the seaman. After all, nobody in possession of this season's facts would bother going to sea for pleasure were it not for the deep-rooted conviction that somehow a better deal will come our way. So on to new horizons we steer, with our selective recall facilities working overtime to expunge recent vows to sell the boat and buy a motorhome the moment we make dry land. Fortunately, a quirk of human nature always seems to bring out the best of times along with the worst. I have surprisingly happy memories of days stuck in harbour as the gale drives relentlessly on outside. Snug in our haven, we chum up with fellow rovers. The waves of our yarns lashing the inside of the pub walls grow ever higher as the pints go down. The fish and chip supper, shared in a midnight saloon over a bottle of rum, whips the daylights out of dinner at the Ritz in duller company. And when the headwind finally relents and the tide serves for home, the feeling of comradeship as the boats creep out together at dawn to hoist sail in a leftover sea takes a lot of beating. Another bonus is the way filthy weather forces new discoveries by diverting us from the beaten track. This has twice led me to the unforgiving coast of Norfolk. The first occasion was long before GPS. My crew and I were taking a hammering as we hacked home from Norway in a hard westerly. Operating on sextant, lead, log, lookout and trust in the Lord, we came in over the swart and the broken bank, with Smith's Knoll somewhere ahead. All we needed was a big catch of the Silver Darlings and a run ashore in canny shields to be one with the fishermen who lived their lives out here under sail, men who fixed their position by tasting what the tallow arming their deep-sea lead brought up from the bottom. Gravel, mud and a bit of smashed-up cockle shell. That'll be the indefatigable bank, boys. Then our wind dropped. At first, we were glad of the respite, but we hadn't much fuel. And when it fell even lighter and served up dense fog as a side dish, we weren't so pleased. In the end, it settled into a light southerly, and we bore away across the banks towards northern East Anglia. Somehow we avoided the drying shoal of Haysborough in the darkness and stood in on the echo sounder. We found 3 fathoms soon after what passed for sunrise, tacked onto starboard and worked the depth contour southeastward, hard on the almost non-existent breeze. For 12 hours we saw absolutely nothing, but we heard the occasional dog barking on the beach and from time to time the hollow shot of a wildfowler's gun. A few hours before nightfall, the breeze died and the tide turned foul, so we filled the paraffin light and anchored. Morning broke with a bright northwesterly, pin-sharp air and the revelation that we had fetched up off a tiny fairground whose neon sign bore the brave legend, Joyland. "I hope they've had more joy than me," my mate grumbled as he stumped forward to weigh anchor. This year saw me on another passage down from Scandinavia. Once again it was interrupted by weather, but this was 2008, so rather than a gentle fog, what I got was gale-force southerlies. After a week lurking in Whitby, I slid out and had another shot at Dover and the Channel. The remainder of the horror show that follows has already been rubbed out of my aching brain by my seaman's self-preservation instinct, but I've made a point of remembering every minute of a magical run along the Norfolk coast one sharp morning. The overnighter across the Wash had been the best sail of the summer, and although the forecast was grim, I pressed on with the option of bunking into Lowestoft if things turned to rats. As the shoreline slid smoothly by, I noticed a procession of stone and flint church towers on or near the sea's edge. Many of these have stood since not long after Duke William imposed social order nearly 1,000 years ago. Some rise alone from the cornfields left behind by villages which fell apart at the Black Death, yet still they keep their vigil. Sailors watch the same towers from the decks of slack-winded collier brigs, working between London and the Tyne, where their wives prayed the Lord to blow the wind southerly. Sailing trawlermen rollick past these churches, homeward bound to Lowestoft with a hold full from the Dogger Bank. Steam drifters rowed steadily northwards, independent at last of wind and tide, checking their position on the flags of St. George as they hunted the shoals of herring. Walcott, Happisburgh, Lessingham and Hempstead, Waxham, Horsey and Winterton, they'll still be there when we're long gone. I wonder who'll be sailing past them 100 years from now.